Dr. Joshua Curry glanced up from his position in front of a cowboy with a swollen red jaw. The doc had a pair of dental pliers in his hand, and he was fixing to pull an infected tooth.
Doc, my friend's got a bullet wound and needs taken care of.
Take him in the other room, and I'll be there directly.
Dr. Curry turned back to the cowboy, stuck the pliers in his mouth, and yanked a bloody tooth out of his gum. The doc stood up and threw the tooth into a wastebasket.
That'll be 25 cents, Joey.
Joey released his jaw just long enough to fish in his pocket and hand the doctor some change. Then he bolted from the room. Curry wiped his bloody hands on his coat and strolled over to look down at Cal on the table.
When did this happen?
Yesterday afternoon. Twarn't more than a scratch, so we didn't think nothing of it till it started to swell up.
How did it happen?
Pearly scowled, wondering what in the hell that had to do with fixing the leg.
He was shot.
The doctor raised his eyebrows, looked at the expression on Pearly's face, and he decided not to ask anything else. He placed the back of his hand on Cal's forehead.
This boy's burning up with fever. The wound is seriously infected.
Well, is there anything you can do for him, Doc?
Curry probed the area of the wound again, shaking his head.
Well, I can drain some of the separation from the muscle. The latest medical books say that helps some, and there's a new medicine out called aspirin that's supposed to be good for fever and such. That and some laudanum for the pain should do the trick.
You think he'll get better?
If he doesn't respond within 24 hours, I may have to take the leg off.
Well, he's young and strong, Doc, and he's been shot plenty of times before. He'll do just fine.
I hope so. Because if I have to take his leg off that high, he probably won't survive the surgery.
Curry turned to a metal tray of instruments and pulled out a long, shining scalpel.
Now, why don't you go get some breakfast while I do my work? This is not something you want to watch.
Pearly put his hand on Cal's shoulder and squeezed it, then picked up his hat and walked out of the room. He headed toward Aunt Bee's boarding house, uttering a silent prayer that Cal would be all right. Pearly was on his second helping of flapjacks, eggs, and sausage when Sheriff Walter Pike sat down at his table.
Howdy, son.
Pearly ignored the sheriff, concentrating on finishing his food so we could get back to the doctor's office to see how Cal was doing.
A cowboy over at the cattleman said you brought in a friend with a gunshot wound.
That's right.
How did that happen to occur?
Didn't happen in town, Sheriff, so I can't see as it's any your business how it happened.
Sure you want to play it that way, son?
Pearly shrugged.
A man came into town yesterday evening from the hole in the wall. He said a couple of men had attacked some cowboys up there and killed four men. He also said one of the killers had been wounded.
That's so.
You boys wouldn't happen to have been up near the hole in the wall yesterday, would you?
Like I said, Sheriff, didn't happen in town. You sheriff the hole in the wall, too? From what I hear, there ain't nothing but outlaws and men riding the Owl Hoot Trail up that way. You paid to watch out for them galoots?
No, son. I'm not paid to bother with the hole in the wall. But Big Jim Slaughter has offered a $500 reward for any information on the men who've been attacking him up there.
$500, huh? That's a right sizable chunk of change.
More than I make here in a year.
Pearly stood up and threw some money on the table.
Maybe you all think about changing jobs then, Sheriff, if money means that much to you.
God damn it, Slaughter has a couple of hard cases here in town who are going to be awfully interested in anybody with a bullet wound.
Let them come, Sheriff. I can take care of myself.
I told you, I'm paid to keep the peace here in Jackson. I don't want any gunplay where innocent citizens might get hurt.
Don't worry none, Sheriff. If I'm forced to draw iron, well, no innocent people get killed.
Your name's Pearly, isn't it?
Yep.
I want you to get your friend and get the hell out of my town as soon as he's able to travel.
Got my word on that, Sheriff.
Pearly walked out of the boarding house dining room without looking back. When he got to the doctor's office, he found the doctor washing off his instrument.
Well, how's Cal, Doc?
I got about 2 cups of pus out of that leg, and the swelling's gone down quite a bit. I've given him some laudanum, so he's resting quietly for now.
Pearly stepped over to stand next to the table on which Cal lay. The boy's face was covered with sweat.
Got a room in the back where you can keep him. You need to keep feeding him beef broth and soup, and keep his strength up if he's gonna fight off the infection.
I can do that.
The next 24 hours should tell us if he's gonna make it or not.
The doctor and Pearly picked Cal up and carried him into the back room and placed him on a bed. After the doctor left, Cal's eyes flicked open and he stared at Pearly, his pupils pinpoints from the laudanum.
Howdy, Pearly.
Hello, Cal. How you feeling?
I've been shot, you fool. How do you think I feel?
Well, hell, Cal, you've been shot so many times before, I'd have thought you'd gotten used to it by now. Guess we're going to have to paint a big old bullseye on your carcass, make it easier for the outlaws to hit next time.
Hell, partner, they don't seem to have no trouble hitting me as it is.
I done told you, boy. You a magnet for lead.
Pearly, I want you to leave me here and go warn Smoke about Slaughter. He needs to know what's going on.
Don't you worry none about Smoke, Cal. He's got Lewis and Muskrat with him. They can take care of themselves.
But...
No buts, Cal. You rest now while I go over to Aunt B's and get you some grub. Doc says you gotta eat so you can get over this wound.
Oh, all right, Pearly. I am a mite tired.
When he lapsed into unconsciousness, Pearly stood up and walked out of the doctor's front room.
Take care of my friend, Doc. Money's no object.
It's not a question of money, mister. It's in God's hands now. All we can do is wait to see what he's decided to do with your friend.
Well, while God makes up his mind, I'm gonna go over to Aunt B's and get him some grub so he can get better.
Smoke stood on a promontory overlooking the trail leading from the hole in the wall toward Colorado, his binoculars to his eyes. Muskrat Calhoun stirred the small fire they'd built under the overhang of a group of boulders. The temperature was rising after the freezing chill of the snowstorm last night, but the air was still cold enough to freeze water in a canteen.
You see anything, Smoke?
No, but I figure Slaughter will be getting his men moving before too long. Else he's going to have some heavy winter storms to deal with on his way to Colorado.
Lewis poured himself another cup of coffee and leaned back on his ground blanket.
I'm a little concerned that we haven't heard from Cal and Pearly, Smoke.
Smoke nodded. They'd all heard what they took to be distant gunfire from the direction of the hole in the wall the night before, and they were worried that perhaps Cal and Pearly had been discovered watching the outlaws' hideout.
Yeah, me too, Lewis. If anything's happened to those boys, I don't know what I'd do.
Don't you worry none about those two youngins, Smoke. Appears to me they got enough hair to look out for theyselves.
That's the trouble, Muskrat. They're too brave for their own good. I just don't want them to get hurt because of their loyalty to me.
This isn't just about you, Smoke. Both Cal and Pearly are doing this for Monty and Mary. We hate an injustice as much as we do. And taking a man's wife to settle an old score just isn't done.
I understand that, Lewis. But would you want to try and explain it to Sally if either of them is shot? She thinks of them as our sons.
It ain't never easy to explain nothing to a woman.
Smoke smiled. Mountain men had a way of getting right to the heart of the matter. They were men of little or no formal education, but their years in the high lonesome seemed to endow them with knowledge of life and death that far outstripped men with college degrees.
Sally's as tough as any man I know, Smoke. If worst comes to worst, she'll understand.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. Cal and Pearly are both too brave for their own good sometimes, but they're also smart and crafty. I believe it'll take someone smarter than Jim Slaughter to get the drop on him.
Back in Jackson Hole, Pearly was staying out of sight as much as he could to keep from running into the men Slaughter had sent to look for him. Other than his frequent trips to Aunt B's for food for himself and Cal, he spent all his time sitting by Cal's bed, talking to him and forcing him to eat the beef soup and broth so he could heal properly. Dr. Curry was encouraged that the swelling in Cal's leg had gone down and not returned. The redness of the surrounding tissues was getting better hour after hour, and his temperature had returned to normal too, both good signs according to the doctor. By the morning after his surgery, Cal was feeling fit enough to try to walk around the room on his injured leg, though the doctor forbade any longer journeys.
Walking short distances will help get rid of the stiffness, but don't overdo it and undo what healing is going on.
As Pearly watched Cal's appetite return, he began to have hope there would be no long-lasting effects from the wound and infection in his leg. On the morning of the second day, Dr. Curry said it would be all right for Cal to mount a horse and ride, just as long as he took frequent breaks and stopped if the swelling or redness returned.
I've done all I can, boys. Now it's just going to take some time for the final healing to occur. You take it easy on that leg for the next couple of weeks, young man.
Oh, yes, sir. Come on, Cal. Let's go get a final breakfast at Aunt B's, then we can hit the trail.
Good. I'm about ready for some eggs and flapjacks, instead of that damn beef soup you've been forcing down my gullet.
Forcing hell? You sucked that stuff down like it was honey.
An hour and a half later, they were just finishing their final cups of coffee when Sheriff Walter Pike stepped through the rear door of the dining room. He made his way toward their table, a worried look on his face.
Uh-oh. I don't like the way Sheriff Pike's looking at us, Cal.
Me neither.
Boys, I got some bad news for you.
Yeah, I kind of figured that from the sour look on your face.
Slaughter's men talked to Doc Curry. They found out about your bullet wound. And they're waiting in front of the cattleman's saloon for you to try and leave town.
How many of them are they?
Four.
Sounds like fair odds to me.
You don't understand. These are hard men, hired killers, every one. Why don't you let me sneak you out of town the back way?
No. What do you think, Cal?
Seems to me if we take care of them now, it'll be four less men Smoke we'll have to worry about later.
Pearly nodded and stood up from the table. He put his hat on, pulling it down tight on his head.
Thanks for the offer, Sheriff. I think we'll go out the front door after all.
You boys are crazy.
We've been told that before, Sheriff.
They walked out the front door. A slight limp in Cal's gait was the only sign of his injury. As they stood next to their horses, four men stepped off the boardwalk in front of the cattleman's saloon and spread out in the street.
Hey, you there! We want a word with you.
I got the two on the left.
Cal nodded, not speaking, his eyes watching the eyes of the men in the street. Smoke had taught him not to look at the hands. The eyes would give the first signal a man was about to draw. Sheriff Pike stepped out of the dining room door.
I don't want no trouble in town, boys.
Too late for that, Sheriff. Slaughter offered to pay you for your help. You should have taken him up on it. Now it's our play.
As the outlaw's eyes narrowed, Cal and Pearly crouched and stepped apart to give less of a target. And then they filled their hands with iron. Two of the men across the street grabbed their chests as they were blown backward.
God damn!
Pearly took aim again. The fourth man was a mite faster on the draw, managing to get off a shot that missed Cal's head by inches.
Bam!
And splintered the wooden post next to him. Cal thumbed back the hammer on the knee. Sheriff Pike had his gun only half out of his holster when it was all over.
Jesus Mary, Mother of God!
Pearly and Cal looked around, still holding their pistols out in front of them, making sure there were no more outlaws who wanted to ante up in this hand. Pearly holstered his pistol and turned to the sheriff.
Sheriff Pike, if you have no further need of us, we'll get on our way.
No. I don't think you need to stay around. In fact, I'd be obliged if you get out of my town and not return. You're giving Boot Hill too much business to hang around.
Pearly swung into the saddle and tipped his hat at Pike.
From what you say, Slaughter pays pretty good. There ought to be enough money in their pants to pay for their burials.
Pike nodded. Cal inclined his head toward Aunt Bee's dining room and stepped into his stirrups.
Give what's left over to Aunt Bee and tell her we appreciate the good grub.
With that, the two young gunslingers casually rode out of town, leaving behind a pile of corpses and a growing legend. Jim Slaughter rode at the head of a procession of 34 of the hardest men he could find. There wasn't a one of them who wasn't wanted by the law in one place or another, mostly for murder, armed robbery, or rape. He glanced at the man riding next to him.
Whitey, you got those men watching our back trail like I told you?
Yes, sir. I got two groups of four men each. One group's about 5 miles back, and the other is about 2 miles back. That way, if the first group gets into trouble, the second group can ride up here and warn us.
That's good. I don't know who the hell's bent on causing me trouble up here, but whoever they are, sure are persistent about it.
Swede, riding on the other side of Slaughter, glanced at him.
Yeah, Two attacks in a couple of weeks that cost us 15 men dead and another 6 wounded. So bad they can't fight no more.
You don't think Monte Carson could have spent some of that $50,000 to hire gunnies to come after us, do you?
Nah. Monty's not that smart. Besides, he knew if I suspected he had anything to do with this, I'd have killed his wife pronto.
He's right, Whitey. I asked all around and nobody's been approached for a job like that.
Yeah, maybe he hired them someplace else.
Hell, maybe it was that Smoke Jensen everybody's jawing about.
Slaughter jerked his head toward Whitey.
You know, that's not too unlikely. Maybe Monty brought the old gumman up here with him and a few of his friends. That might explain why nobody in Jackson knew anything about it.
Yeah, but if Jensen was involved, why didn't he finish the job? From what I hear about the old man, it ain't like him to leave a job half done.
What do you mean half done? He got Monty's wife back, and Monty and the rest of whoever helped him out free and clear. What more did he need to do?
Well, it still don't sound like Smoke Jensen to me. I think he would have come into the hole in the wall with his guns blazing. He was sure Jim was dead.
No, I don't agree, Whitey. With odds of 20 to 1, he'd have to be a fool to press his attack any more than he did. And from what I hear, Smoke Jensen ain't no fool. Else he wouldn't have survived as long as he has. He got what he came for and left a winner, like Sweet says.
Well, he sure ain't gonna stay no winner. When we get to Colorado, I'm gonna blow his damn head off.
You think you're that good, Whitey?
Don't you?
Well, I know I'd hate to go up against you. Of course, if I did, I'd kill you. That don't mean this old Gunny Jensen can.
What do you think, Swede?
I don't know, Whitey. You and Big Jim are the fast draws around here. I know I could beat the bastard to death with my fist if it came to that, but I wouldn't want to go up against no quick draw artist with a hand.
One of the men from the rear of the column came galloping up to him.
Hey, boss. We've been riding without stopping since dawn. You think we might stop for a nooning soon?
Yeah, there's no big hurry. Let's stop and build a fire, cook some victuals, and rest our backsides. It's been a long time since I spent all day in a saddle. My bacon is aching.
From a ridge halfway up the slope of a nearby mountain, Smoke, Lewis, and Muskrat Calhoun watched the procession as it stopped and men began to build a fire and cook their food. Smoke glanced back over his shoulder.
I'm getting a mite worried, Lewis. We've been tracking those bastards since 10 o'clock this morning. And we still haven't heard from Cal or Pearly.
Me too, Smoke. Those boys would have been here by now if they were able to travel.
I just hope Slaughter and his men haven't managed to put lead into the boys. Because if they have...
Smoke let the sentence hang in the air, unfinished. But Lewis shivered at the tone of his friend's voice. God help them if they've killed Cal or Pearly. Because there's no telling what Smoke would do. Lewis had heard the story of Smoke scalping and skinning men who'd harmed his family in the past, and he knew Slaughter could expect nothing less if he'd hurt Cal or Pearly. Smoke turned to the mountain man.
Muskrat, will you backtrack for a few miles and see if you can find any trace of Cal or Pearly? I need to know they're safe before we start our attacks on Slaughter.
Sure thing, Smoke. You and Lewis fix you something to eat, and I'll head on back down the trail a piece and see what's going on back there.
Smoke and Lewis stepped out of their saddles and pulled the horses back into the brush so there was no chance of them being seen if Slaughter posted lookouts.
I guess we'll have to have a cold nooning. No way to build a fire with the outlaw so close.
That's true, but all is not lost. I took the trouble to acquire some provisions before we left Jackson Hole for just such an eventuality.
Lewis pulled 2 cans of potted meat, a can of sliced peaches, and a can of sliced pears from his saddlebag.
We may have to eat it cold, but that doesn't mean it has to taste bad.
Lewis, I always knew there was something about you I liked.
Barely an hour had passed before Muskrat returned. He jumped out of the saddle and squatted next to Lewis and Smoke, smiling as they handed him his share of the food. He didn't bother with knives or forks. He just shoveled the food into his mouth with his fingers, hardly bothering to chew before he swallowed.
What'd you find out?
Slaughter ain't as dumb as I thought he was. He's left 2 parties of men behind to guard his back trail. One is hunkered down 4 or 5 mile back, and the other 2 mile back.
That means if Cal and Pearly were delayed for some reason and try to catch up with us, they're liable to be ambushed by those bastards.
Muskrat nodded, as did Lewis.
So, we've got to take out the rear guard first, before we do anything else.
And we got to do it quiet-like, so the others don't know nothing about it.
After Slaughter's main body of men finished lunch and packed up their gear and moved on, Smoke crossed to the other side of the trail, leaving Muskrat and Lewis where they were. They set up an ambush not far from the edge of the road, and then they waited for the two groups of rear guards to come. It took the first party of four men an hour and a half to appear. They were moving slowly down the trail, keeping their eyes to the rear. As they came abreast of the ambush site, Smoke stood up, signaled for Muskrat and Lewis, and broke from cover. He had the tomahawk he always carried in his right hand and his bowie knife in his left. As the first man turned and caught sight of Smoke, he let fly with the tomahawk. The second man turned just in time to see Smoke fling himself through the air. Then the man was knocked off his horse. Seconds after, they landed with Smoke on top. Smoke buried his knife to the hilt in the outlaw's abdomen. Smoke rolled off the body in time to see Lewis and Muskrat take out the other two. Lewis with a long, wicked-looking stiletto. Muskrat, by the simple expedient, swinging his long-barreled Sharp Big 50 like a baseball bat.
Let's get these bodies out of sight and wait for the others.
Cal and Pearly were riding along.
You gotta be careful, Pearly. We don't want to ride up Slaughter's rear before we see him.
Don't you worry none, pup. I got my eyes and ears open. We'll see him before they see us, I guarantee.
The words were barely out of his mouth when four men stepped from the bushes next to the trail.
Hands up, gents!
The lead man had a shotgun cradled in his arms, its barrel pointed right at Cal's chest.
Pearly, I thought you were watching.
I was watching the trail, Cal, not the bushes alongside it.
As they raised their hands and climbed down from their horses, the head man pointed his shotgun at Pearly.
What the hell are you doing following us?
Following you? We weren't following nobody.
Oh, yeah? Then what are you doing on this trail today?
They told us in Jackson Hole Big Jim Slaughter and his men were headed out this way.
So you decided to raid up behind us and bushwhack us then, huh?
No, you got it all wrong, partner. Mr. Slaughter asked us to join his gang last week. We decided to take him up on his offer.
What changed your minds?
That blizzard changed our minds, that's what. We about near froze our butts off in them mountains looking for gold.
Yeah, and digging in that frozen ground in the winter is like trying to dig granite. So we decided to take a job with Mr. Slaughter until next spring when the weather's a bit more to our liking.
Hey, it still sounds suspicious to me. I'll tell you what. You hand down those pistols and we'll take you up to see Big Jim. We'll let the boss decide what to do with you.
Cal and Pearly handed the man their pistols, and the four men followed him down the trail. After a couple of miles, Cal noticed a series of dark stains ahead of him in the dirt of the road. He nudged Pearly with his arm and inclined his head toward the blood stains. Pearly grinned and gave his head a slight nod. When they pulled abreast of the stains, Pearly and Cal reined in their horses, jerking their heads around toward the men behind them. The leader raised his shotgun.
Hey, what the hell's the matter with you two?
We gotta pee.
Seconds later, Lewis, Muskrat, and Smoke stepped from the bushes.
Drop your guns. We'll kill you where you sit.
The four men raised their hands, eyes wide at the sight of the men stepping from the bushes to capture them. After Cal and Pearly retrieved their pistols, they made the men get down off their horses.
Now, how can we make sure these men join up with Slaughter later?
Muskrat grinned and drew his finger across his throat, his tongue sticking out.
I see. Kill him and scalp him as a warning to that bastard Slaughter.
That's one way. Any other suggestions?
Lewis walked over to the men and held out his hands.
Give me your boots.
Are you daft, man? We'll freeze our feet off out here. We'll lose all our toes.
I'll give each of you a couple of shirts from your saddlebags to wrap around your feet. Can't you protect your toes long enough to get back to Jackson?
No way, mister.
Lewis shrugged, and then he pulled out his Arkansas toothpick.
All right, it's your choice. I guess I'm going to have to cut your Achilles tendons and let you crawl all the way back to Jackson.
Hold on.
The man quickly pulled off his boots and handed them to Lewis, as did his companions. Cal and Pearly rounded up the men's horses, and the group rode away, while the outlaws began the long walk back toward Jackson Hole.
Why didn't you let me scalp them?
This way's better. By the time those men get to Jackson, their feet will be in such bad shape they won't be able to walk for weeks. And by then, this will all be over.
Damn it all, man! I hadn't scalped anybody in a couple of years! I'm gonna get out of practice.
Slaughter sat by the campfire as dusk closed in on his group of hired killers. He'd send Whitey back along their back trail to tell the men he'd posted there to come in for supper and to get some sleep. As he scraped the last of his beans and fried fatback off his plate, Whitey rode up in a cloud of dust, his face carrying a worried look on him.
Boss?
Yeah?
I rode at least 6 miles back, and I searched both sides of the trail going and coming.
And?
There was no sign of any of our men. Not a trace.
You see any blood on the trail?
Nothing. No tracks, no blood. Just an empty trail.
Damn! I told you someone was out to get me. Made me look bad.
Taking out 8 men without leaving a trace or firing a shot goes way beyond trying to make you look bad, Jim.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What are we gonna do about it, boss?
We don't dare post any more men away from the main group. We can't afford to lose any more guns.
I can always hire more guns. That's not the problem. I just don't want the men to get the idea we're fighting a losing battle out here.
You ever think that we'd be better off just forgetting about that money Monte Carson owes us and going on the trail, boss?
Yeah!
Damn!
Go on! Keep talking like that, Sweden. I'll put one in your gizzard.
I didn't mean nothing by it, boss. It was just a suggestion.
Just be sure you don't ever say anything like that in front of the men.
I won't!
Good! Now you and Whitey go get some shut-eye. We're gonna need to keep a sharp lookout tomorrow.
The outlaw's campfire had almost died out when Smoke waved his hand at Muskrat, pointing to the men sitting guard at regular intervals around the camp. Muskrat nodded, the stubs of his teeth glowing in reflected moonlight as he grinned. Seconds later, he was gone from sight. Smoke hunkered down, moved from shadow to shadow, never letting the guard he was stalking get a glimpse of his movement. It took Smoke 20 minutes to cover the 30 yards to the guard. He came up behind him. He eased the man back and laid him flat on the ground. Then he moved the knife blade in a semicircle around the man's head. He hooked his fingers in the slit and gripped and pulled, yanking a bloody scalp off in one piece. Muskrat, at the same time, was doing exactly the same thing to the other guard at the opposite end of the camp. But he was enjoying it a hell of a lot more than Smoke. Lewis, Cal, and Pearlie had been waiting for almost an hour by the time Smoke and Muskrat returned, hands bloody from their grisly task. Smoke was carrying a pot in one hand. Cal took one look at their hands and made a face.
Did you have to do that, Smoke?
Cal, once you kill a man, it doesn't make any difference to him what you do to his body. It's just a piece of meat. Scalping those men makes a few of the outlaws think better of this journey and they take off, then we've saved some lives by what we did.
No matter what you call it, I don't think I could do it.
That's why I didn't ask you to do it, Cal.
Did you scalp your man too?
Yeah, but that's not all I did.
What else did you do?
I cut some chunks out of his arm and leg and made a couple of slashes over his liver like I was taking some home to eat.
Oh, no.
Oh, come on, pup. I ain't gonna eat it. I just wanted some of the men back there to get the idea that somebody was.
Good move, Muskrat. Wish I'd thought to do the same.
I don't know about those fellas over there, Smoke, but you and Muskrat are sure scaring the hell out of me.
Pearlie looked pointedly at the pot Smoke was carrying.
Do I smell grub?
Yeah, since we can't build a fire, I stole some of their beans and fat back. Still warm, so help yourselves.
As Pearlie grabbed for the pot, Cal knocked his hand away.
Pearlie, you go last. That way there's a chance the rest of us will get something to eat, too.
Slaughter rolled over, brushing a light coating of snow off his ground blanket and sleeping bag. He grabbed the coffee cup lying next to his saddle and began to move toward what was left of the campfire.
That's strange. The guards are supposed to keep the fire going through the night.
Sensing something was not right, Slaughter glanced at the sky. There was as yet no sign of dawn, so it was still very early. He bent over and felt the coffee pot sitting on the edge of the fire. It was barely warm. Now he knew something was seriously out of kilter. The one thing men on guard duty made sure of was hot coffee to keep them awake during the long, quiet nights. Slaughter went back to his sleeping bag and pulled his Colt pistol from his holster. He eared back the hammer and moved quickly over to Whitey and Swede, who were sleeping next to each other. He shook Whitey's shoulder.
Whitey, wake up. Something's going on.
What?
Get up. Wake Swede up, too. I'm going to check on the guards.
Whitey and Swede got out of their blankets and followed Slaughter toward the guard posts.
Jesus!
By the light of the match, Swede and Whitey could see what was left of the guard. Bare white skull gleamed, reflecting the light, and chunks of both arms were missing, and deep cuts had been made over the man's liver.
That's Joey Lacey! Him and me used to be saddle partners.
He's just dead meat now. You and Whitey drag him off into the bushes over there. I don't want any of the other men to see this.
But boss, it looks like somebody ate on him.
Shut the hell up, I said. You gotta get a hold of yourself, sweetie, or you ain't gonna be any use to me.
All right, Jim, I'll try.
Now do like I said and get Joe's body out of sight. I'm gonna go take a look at the other guard. I have a feeling he's gonna be in similar shape. We'd have heard something from him by now.
But boss, who could have done this?
The same ones who attacked us at the hole in the wall, and the same ones who killed or ran off our guards yesterday. Now get moving! We ain't got all night.
As dawn began to lighten the sky, the men in the gang began to move out of their sleeping blankets and stand and stretch and make their way to the campfire. Slaughter had gotten it going again and had several large pots of coffee brewing and beans and bacon cooking in large cast iron skillets.
Gather around here, men. I got some bad news for you.
As the outlaws crowded near the fire, warming their hands and getting mugs of coffee, Slaughter stood in front of them.
It seems some of the men I hired to go to Colorado with us have turned yellow and deserted us during the night. And no need to worry, though. We passed through several towns on the way to our destination, and I'm sure we can hire suitable replacements for the yellow bellies that took off.
Yeah, and I bet they'll be better to have by our sides in a fight than the cowardly dogs that left.
How many of us are there left now?
We still have over 25 hands, all good men with a gun. And with the extras I'm going to pick up along the way, we'll have plenty of men to do the job I have planned.
By the way, Mr. Slaughter, just what is the job we're headed for?
You'll find out when we get there. Until then, you're all being paid damn good wages to go for a ride in the country. So enjoy it.
Damn good wages don't do much good if we don't live to spend them.
And just to make things interesting, there's going to be a $1,000 bonus in it for every man who stays the course until we're done. That's in addition to the $100 a month wages.
I could always use an extra thousand or so dollars.
Swede and Whitey accompanied Slaughter back to his sleeping blankets.
How the hell are we going to give everybody an extra thousand, boss? That won't leave diddly for us.
Just how many men do you think are going to survive this little expedition, Whitey? You know with Monty waiting for us, he's going to be loaded for bear. I figure we're going to lose two out of three of these men just getting our hands on the payroll. And as for the rest, they may not survive to get their share either.
Ah, gotcha, boss.
Yeah. Once we get our hands on that money, I may just retire and settle down someplace. I may even give up the Owl Hoot Trail.
That'll be the day.
Smoke eased back on his hands and knees from the bushes he was lying behind until he could get to his feet and return to his friends without being seen by Slaughter's men. He'd been watching the efficient ways Slaughter dealt with the dead men he and Muskrat had left for him to find.
What'd you hear, Smoke?
Slaughter is a smooth operator. He hid the guards' bodies, told his men they deserted the gang. He didn't say anything about them being killed.
So all that was for nothing?
No, not for nothing, Cal. We cut the number of outlaws down by 10 men, over a third of their strength. And more importantly, we showed Slaughter we can get to him anytime we want to. We just got to be eating on him inside.
You don't realize how important that is, Cal. Once you break a man's confidence, make him know in his heart he's vulnerable, you're only a step away from breaking his spirit. And when a man's spirit is broken, it shows to those around him, making it tough for him to be an effective leader.
That's right, young'un. Men won't hardly follow nobody they don't have confidence in. Especially if it means putting their butts in a ringer like a gunfight.
All right, I understand.
I figure we're wasting our time here. And sooner or later, we're gonna make a mistake. And I don't like the odds for a head-to-head fight with 20 hard cases.
Does that mean we're going to return to Big Rock?
Yeah, Lewis. Eventually. We need to get home and make sure Monty has the town ready for Slaughter and his men's attack.
I don't know as I particularly like that word, eventually.
Well, I don't think we should leave without a little goodbye party first. Do you?
Hot damn, now you're talking, Smoke. I'm sure getting tired of all this pussyfooting around.
Let's strike up the band and call the dance, Smoke. Those hombres will never know what hit them.
You sure you're up to this, Cal? Your leg is going to take quite a beating if we ride into that camp with our six guns blazing.
It's my sore. I won't lie to you, Smoke. But it'll be all right, and the wound's pretty near all healed up.
I thought you didn't like the odds of a head-to-head fight.
I don't plan on a siege, Lewis. What I want to do is hit them hard, bust up and wound or kill as many as we can in one lightning strike, then hightail it toward Big Rock as fast as we can.
They'll come after us.
Sure. It'll take them a while to get organized. And by then, we'll be so far ahead of them, they'll never catch us.
What about me?
Are you willing to come to help us out for another week or so?
I ain't never quit no job before, young'un, and I don't intend to now.
Then what I need you to do is follow Slaughter's gang after our attack. But stay out of sight, and don't do anything that might get you killed.
And just what do you want me to do besides follow them?
If we do this right, we're going to kill another 10 or so of his men. So he's going to have to hire more gun hawks in the towns between here and Big Rock. I need you to let us know just how many men we're going to be facing when he gets to Big Rock. You'll have to stay back out of sight. And every time he leaves a town, send me a wire telling me if he's managed to get any more men.
You think we'll have enough time to get ready, Smoke?
Sure. It's going to take Slaughter twice as long to make the trip with all those men. Especially since they're going to want to spend a few nights in the towns along the way, getting liquored up and whored up.
Then you best be on your way, Little Beaver.
Thanks for all you've done, Muskrat. We couldn't have done this without you.
I know, but I've been hankering to make a trip down Colorado way for some years now. I figured it's about time I looked old Beartooth up and seen how he's doing.
Let's saddle up and shag our mounts, boys. We're burning daylight.
Dawn was just breaking, and they wanted to hit the outlaws' camp before the hard cases were up and functioning with clear heads. The group got up on their horses.
I'll give you boys a little covering fire from up here with my old sharps. I ought to be able to put lead in a couple of those bastards before the fight's over.
Smoke grinned and pulled his hat down low as he put the spurs to Joker. The reins in his teeth, both hands filled with iron. Sally Jensen and Mary Carson strolled down the boardwalk of the main street of Big Rock, Colorado, watching the construction going on around town.
I haven't seen this much activity since Smoke and I founded the town some years ago.
That was during the Tilden Franklin affair, wasn't it?
Yes, about 6 months before you and Monty became engaged. He'd taken control of the town called No Name, and we wanted decent folk to have a place to live and raise their children without having gunmen running the town.
Well, you certainly succeeded.
In a large part, that's due to Monty's influences, Mary. He manages to keep the riffraff out of town while letting men be men and not overly regulating their natural horseplay.
Big Rock is a good town, Sally, and Monty is a good man. I'm so happy we have so many friends here that have pledged to help us in our fight with Jim Slaughter.
Looking up, Sally saw Johnny North and his wife, Belle, riding into town. A pack horse behind him with a suitcase strapped on. North, an ex-gun slick, had married the widow Colby after the Tilden Franklin affair. And they lived about 20 miles outside of Big Rock on a ranch next to the Sugarloaf. Evidently, a lot of people who liked and admired Monty Carson were coming into town to stay until this fight was over. Sally and Mary continued their walk. When they came to the general store, they had to step into the street to avoid the crowd of men and women going in and out. Ed, the owner of the shop, was busy nailing boards across the big front window of the store. He stopped to tip his hat to Sally and Mary.
Hello, Ed.
Howdy, Sally. Mary?
Business looks like it's booming.
Yes, it is. However, in review of the nature of this, emergency, I'm selling ammunition and building supplies at my cost. I wouldn't want to profit off of Carson's trouble.
That's awfully nice of you, Ed.
Oh, heck, it ain't nothing. Everybody's pitching in. That's what friends are for.
They were interrupted by the approach of Haywood Arden, the editor of the Big Rock Guardian, the town newspaper. He was gray-haired with ink stains on both hands, and he wore a white shirt with the sleeves rolled up and a plaid vest.
Mary, do you have time for a quick interview?
Wow, what do you need to know, Haywood?
I know the leader of the gang is Jim Slaughter, but I don't know the names of any of his cohorts.
Sally put her hand on Mary's shoulder.
I can see you're going to be busy for a while, so I'll just go on up to Monty's office and see how the preparations for the attack are going.
Mary nodded as she turned back to Haywood.
There was this albino named Whitey Jones and this very tall man called Swede Johansson.
Sally walked to the sheriff's office.
Oh, hello, Sally.
Hello, Monty. I just came by to see how you're doing with the fortifications of the town.
Here, let me show you.
Sally stepped to the desk and watched as Monty pointed out where the citizens of the town were building blockades and fortifications in preparation for Slaughter's attack.
So you can see, Sally, once the outlaws come into town, the blockades will runnel them down to the center of Main Street.
Where you have both sides of the street covered by men on rooftops and in buildings along the way.
That's right. We'll have maximum firepower and minimum chance of any citizens getting shot.
Suddenly, his face fell and he leaned forward, both hands on his desk.
What is it, Monty?
I just don't feel right letting a town get in the middle of my problems. There's bound to be someone that takes lead because of me and what I did years ago. It just isn't right.
This is our town, Monty, and you are our sheriff and our friend. There is not one person in Big Rock who, even if they know they're going to be shot, will not stand by you in your time of need. Like Ed Jackson said to Mary a while ago, that's what friends are for.
I know. I just don't want anyone hurt on account of me.
Then work as hard as you can to make our defenses as good as you can. That's all anyone here expects.
Jim Slaughter was in the process of folding up his ground blanket and sleeping bag.
What the hell? That sounds like horses.
Slaughter glanced over his shoulder toward the campfire and saw that most of his men were still milling around, grabbing biscuits and beans and coffee. Most of them still half asleep at this early hour.
Whitey.
Yeah, boss?
Tell the men to spread out. They're sitting ducks standing so close to the fire like they are. Do it before it's too...
Suddenly, four shapes materialized out of the fog like crazed ghosts on a fierce rampage. Orange blossoms of flame exploding from the guns they held in their hands. The faces were covered with bandanas, and their hats were pulled low over their faces as they rode straight into the knot of men around the campfire. Slaughter's men scattered as fast as their legs could carry them, some diving to the ground. Others trying to hide behind trees or saddles on the ground as the marauders galloped through camp.
God damn!
They were under attack from all sides, it seemed. Big Jim dove to the ground behind his saddle as one of the riders, a big man with broad shoulders on a big roan-colored horse with snow-white hips, rode right at him. He buried his face in the soft loam of the ground, and he felt, rather than saw, the bullet from the big man's pistol tearing to his saddle and the ground around him as the giant palouse jumped over him. Miraculously, he was unhit. Slaughter recognized that horse. It was the one Johnny West had been riding in Jackson Hole. So he was one of the bastards who'd been killing his men all along. That son of a bitch had played him for a fool. Whitey Jones ran for his saddle, hunched over, expecting a bullet in his back the whole way. As he bent to grab his greener shotgun, one of the raiders rode by, his pistol pointing at the albino. Whitey whirled, pointing his express gun just as the rider dropped the hammer. The bullet grazed Whitey's cheek and tore a chunk out of his left ear, spinning him around and snapping his head back. Blood spurting into his eyes and blinding him momentarily. Whitey sleeved blood out of his eyes and rolled onto his stomach, pointing his 10-gauge at the back of a raider. Ben Brown, one of the men who'd been with Slaughter for several years, stepped between the rider and Whitey, his arms outstretched as he raised his pistol.
You dumbass!
Swede, too far from his saddle to get his gun, pulled his long knife out and stood there, waiting as a rider rode down on him. He bared his teeth. The rider's eyes grew wide as he saw that the man had no gun, and he held his fire. lashing out with his leg and catching Swede in the mouth with a pointed boot as he raced by. The entire firefight lasted only 4 or 5 minutes, but to the men of Slaughter's command, it seemed like hours before the four riders rode off into the mist, disappearing as quickly and as silently as they'd arrived, leaving bodies lying all over the Wyoming countryside. Slaughter got to his feet, brushing dirt and leaves and sweat off his face. Whitey was 20 feet away, squatting over the prone body of Swede, shaking his shoulder to see if he was alive. Slaughter looked around him as he walked toward his two lieutenants. He counted 5 or 6 dead. Several more were so severely wounded he knew they'd either be dead soon or of no use to him in his quest for the $50,000.
Whitey, how sweet.
Whitey turned his head, and Slaughter saw a bleeding furrow across his left cheek and most of his ear missing. Blood was streaming down Whitey's face, but it wasn't spurting, so Slaughter figured he'd be all right, though he was quite a bit uglier than he had been before.
Looks like he's lost most of his front teeth and may have a broken jaw.
Goddamn, what the hell hit me?
One of those bastards kicked you in the face. I saw the whole thing. He had you dead in his sights, and instead of blowing your head off, he tried to kick it off when he seen you didn't have no gun.
Son of a bitch is gonna wish he shot me if he ever sees me again.
Well, from the looks of things, we'll probably be seeing more of them than we want to. It don't look like they have any intention of leaving us alone on our way to Colorado.
Whitey helped Swede do his feed and poured him some water from a canteen.
So, you haven't had enough yet, huh?
Hell no! This has gone too far for me to quit now. I'm gonna get that money, kill Carson and everybody helping him, and then I'm gonna kill his wife and friends and his dog if he has one. I'm gonna make that sumbitch wish he never laid eyes on me.
Swede looked up, blood dripping from his ruined mouth.
You can count me in on that, boss. Nobody gets away with doing this to me. Nobody.
How about you, Whitey? You in or out?
Oh, hell, boss, you know I'm in. I've been with you through good times and bad, and damned if this ain't one of the worst so far. But I'm in.
Good. And let's check the men out and see how many we got left who are able to go on.
What are we gonna do about the wounded?
Those that can ride, we'll take with us to the next town. Those that can't...
The other boys might not like that much.
I don't give a good goddamn what the boys like or don't like. They better learn to like what I tell them to like, or they'll end up just like those suckers out there. Face down in the dirt is dinner for the worms.
After he'd made the rounds and salvaged what wounded men he thought might be able to make the trip, Whitey approached Slaughter, who was still standing by the campfire, drinking coffee, lost in his own thoughts.
You want me to have the men make up a burial party?
Hell no. We're gonna mount up and head on down the trail. Staying here is just inviting another attack by West and his cohorts.
West? You mean that big fella was Johnny West?
Yeah. I recognized that big roan Palouse he was riding. It was the same one he had in Jackson Hole.
I never trusted that son of a bitch. I knew he was a ringer from the get-go.
Oh, he fooled me. Hell, I even tried to hire him.
You were right as rain about one thing.
What's that?
He was damn sure a killer. He went through us like green through a goose and never got a scratch on him.
He won't be so lucky next time I see him.
If you don't get these men mounted up, we might not live long enough to see that.